2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Inside Sources. Inside Sources with Boyd Matheson.
Well, summer wanes as we get towards Labor Day and ultimately to the fall election season. The midterms will be upon us, and of course, candidates hoping to win are going to have to do what you always have to do in a campaign, and that is get voters to actually come out and, you know, vote. There's a new Brigham Young University study that shows significant gaps in voter turnout through a host of things like race, age, party. We wanted to dig into the numbers. This is a fascinating study with Brigham Young University and the University of Virginia. Over 400 million voter records from the elections of 2014 and 16. So this is my kind of deep dive into the numbers. Dr. Michael Barber, a professor at BYU of political science, he's the co-author of the study, joins us on the line. Professor Barber, thanks for jumping on.
Well, thank you for having me.
And first, let's just dive in. The sheer size of this study is extraordinary to me, so I'm really anxious to get some of the key takeaways. Give us some background there.
Sure. So you're absolutely right. This is a massive study. We've collected around 400 million voter records indicating whether or not people turned out to vote in 2014 and 2016. So as far as we're aware, this is the most comprehensive look at who votes. And we've got data from every state in the country, nearly every registered voter in the country. It's a pretty expansive and extensive look at who votes in the United States.
And so let's get to some of the key takeaways from that. Again, I love the fact that you're literally almost going neighborhood to neighborhood, district to district with the amount of data that you had. So what are some of the top line trends that you noticed in terms of who's showing up and actually doing the voting and who's not showing up?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. Because we have so many records, voter records, we can really look at an incredibly fine-grained level at neighborhoods and, you know, small communities and see who is voting and who is not. The patterns that we find are that non-white voters tend to turn out at a lower rate than white voters. People who affiliate with the Republican Party tend to vote more often than those who affiliate with the Democratic Party. But the biggest differences that we find really had to do with age. And we found that older voters, those that were older than 60, they turned out at incredibly high rates, while those who are younger, less than 30 years old, they were some of the least likely people to vote.
I think that's so fascinating. Having endured a number of campaigns, it always seems, again, whether it's a local race or a national race, everyone always has kind of the unicorn of the young people are going to show up for us and actually vote. And what your data just confirms that those younger voters may be loud, they may be active on social media, but they don't always execute and show up in the end.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Older voters were more than twice as likely to vote as younger voters. The interesting thing about that is in a lot of these cases with these other factors like partisanship or race, some of that is due to where people live and the types of electoral environments that they live in. But with young people live everywhere. And so we can't really explain that by virtue of, oh, they tend to live in you know, less competitive areas, or the method by which they vote is different. You know, there's young people all over the country, and they just don't seem to vote as often as their parents and grandparents do.
Yeah, so interesting. And as you look at that kind of neighborhood to neighborhood, I thought this was a really important part of your study, and that is that, you know, in these like neighborhoods, we do, whether it's not just rural and urban, but just kind of who we tend to live around. They tend to be people that look like, think like, act like us. So that ends up driving a lot of the voting behavior as well.
Yeah, it really does. People tend to live around people who are like them. And what that means is that people who have a lower propensity to vote, they tend to live around other people who also have lower propensities to vote. And what that does is it can create these geographic areas where turnout is just very low. And one of the implications of that is that if representatives are looking to represent their constituents, as we would hope they are, these areas with really low turnout, they might kind of fall off the radar of elected representatives, because these are areas where whether a representative is reelected or not really depends on their ability to get voted, get votes. And if these areas have very low turnout, then they might not kind of get the same attention as other areas that have higher turnout.
Yeah, and going to that point, kind of those turnout deserts versus a turnout oasis, I think there's two parts to it, and I'd love your perspective on this, Professor. You kind of have the we the people component to it, that we the people have to show up if they want change. They've got to show up and vote. At the same time, I also think there are opportunities for elected officials to really focus on, what are currently turnout deserts where the people just aren't showing up. And actually invite people to be part of something. What do you see as the opportunities or the trends? How do we get beyond those turnout deserts and turn them into a very active, engaged place?
Yeah, I think this is an opportunity that elected officials really have from both parties.
Yeah.
And if you're an elected official and you're thinking, how am I going to win my election? You kind of have two routes. You can try to persuade someone who is going to vote but may not vote for you. You can persuade them to vote for you. The other option is you could go mobilize a new voter. You can go find someone who isn't likely to vote and get them to vote. And hopefully they vote for you. A lot of research has suggested that persuasion route is really hard. It's very hard to persuade people. They tend to be pretty stuck or kind of determined in who they're going to vote for, which to me suggests that it would be really great if politicians spent more of their time and more of their resources on that mobilization aspect, on going and getting new voters to turn out, getting new voters registered to vote, that sort of thing. That's really, a missed opportunity in many cases.
Yeah, and many times that that missed opportunity sort of perpetuates the divisiveness because then you're kind of going for those that are already the known and you know where they fall and what they're likely to do. And so you can kind of stick with the fake fights and the false choices. Are there other things that came out of your study or things that you're keeping your eye on that might help us both tone things down in terms of the divisiveness, but also really engage a new set of voters who maybe aren't engaged in the process now?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the studies that we're doing we've done already with these data is we've started looking at whether the way in which people vote impacts turnout. So we've used these same data to look at whether a vote by mail system like we have here in Utah, whether that drives turnout higher and whether that tends to mobilize one party over the other. What we've found is that it does tend to increase turnout by a small amount, but still nevertheless increases turnout. The great thing that we've found and other studies have found is that neither party needs to fear vote by mail. Vote by mail doesn't tend to benefit one party or the other. Turnout tends to go up kind of equally across the board. And so I think that's an area where politicians of both parties could really get behind supporting, innovations that help to increase turnout and not necessarily worry that innovation is going to impact their, likelihood of being, reelected or holding the majority or that sort of thing. I think that's one thing Utah's done really well. I think we have a great vote by mail system and we have both parties in the state that are pretty supportive of that system, and I think that's really great.
Fantastic. Dr. Michael Barber, BYU Professor of Political Science, co-author of this study. It is a deep dive. This is the hard work and heavy lifting, and love that you
have all jumped on board, and this is great information for everybody. Professor Barber, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Great deep dive there. And as always, it comes back to we the people. You got to show up. You got to vote. If you want to change, you got to engage. That's the name of the game. We'll be right back.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.